When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's recap the Seahawks draft and figure out what grade Trevor Sikkema of Pro Football Focus is going to give it. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Trevor, how's it going?
It's going great. Appreciate you guys having me.
We are happy to have you on. We have so much to talk to you about, and we'll probably ask you a few questions about some other draft classes outside of Seattle. Before we get to it, though, you gave the Seahawks a B+. Now, Bs and Cs get degrees, so you will not find me arguing with that. But why not an A, and why better than a C? Why specifically a B+?
No, I think it's a B+ because they drafted what they wanted to draft. There were a couple of positions where, okay, you're drafting guys a little bit higher than where I have them valued on my big board. You know, A.J. Barner, I can understand exactly why they drafted him, right? You've got, you know, receiving tight ends on the team right now. You want to get more of a blocking tight end there, but you know, he's a lot higher of where they picked him, the relative pick selection versus where he was on my big board. The same thing with Nehemiah Pritchett. But yeah, it's just overall, they took a lot of guys that were higher in their picks than where I had them on my big board. But really what you want to focus on the most for Seattle are those two first round, or those two selections that they had, Byron Murphy the second and then Christian Haynes. I absolutely love both of these picks from them. So it's hard for me to really, I mean, a B+ honestly is nitpicking a little bit from the Seahawks, and it's more of just based off of where I had these guys ranked on my big board. But ultimately those first two picks, that's what you highlight the most with Seattle's draft. They needed those two types of players, and they got both of them.
Trevor, when I prepare for the draft, I go about 120 deep to where I'm grinding film, right? I'm looking at all this stuff. Then after that, I glance because I go, well, these are going to be fit type of guys. What fits their system and what they're trying to accomplish? When you look at the Seahawks draft, what looks like the biggest reach? You mentioned, right, focus on the first two picks, number 16 and 81, Murphy and Haynes. But after that, did you feel like, all right, that was a complete reach, and they must see something I don't see?
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing that's too glaring. Again, I bring up Barner because Barner was ranked in the 200s, the early 200s on my big board, just because he's a very, to me, a like streamlined blocking type of tight end, which doesn't make him bad at his job or not valuable. I want to make that very clear. But you get a lot of those guys every single year, you know, so the uniqueness of what he brings to the table, it's something that's kind of replaceable every single year. So I had him much lower on my board versus where they pick him at 121. But again, like I said at the very top, I know why they did it. So it's hard for me to look at it and say, yeah, okay, I could have waited here. You know, with Barner, I feel like there's a good chance they could have got him in the fifth round, like where they picked Nehemiah Pritchett, maybe even the sixth round where they picked Lumea. But I understand what they're going for. Pritchett's kind of the same way. He's a little bit lower on my big board than where the Seahawks ended up drafting him. But corner is often one of those positions, kind of where you have a type, where you interview the guy, you see how he ticks. It's a very interesting position because you have to be unbelievably confident, almost to a fault, to play that position. They know that very well with Devon Witherspoon, who was one of my favorite prospects in the draft last year, and they've already seen good returns on that. So maybe, you know, you interview him, you get to know this player, and he ticks, if you will, the way that you want him to in between the years, and I think that could have been the case with Pritchett. So those are the two selections that are the biggest discrepancy or gap between where they were picked and my big board, but it is defensible with both of them because I see where they're streamlined for what the Seahawks want to do with them.
Trevor, let's go back to pick number 16. Seattle had a choice of someone like Troy Fautanu, which would be filling a giant hole on the roster where there was no depth, or adding to a position that already had some depth, but maybe not that kind of top-level elite talent. They opted to improve a position where they already had some guys. It's almost like a philosophical approach, right? Like you could look at it as, well, I want to be really, really elite here versus just kind of getting a starter here. What did you make of the approach they took in getting Murphy where they already had some defensive linemen?
Yeah, I didn't mind it at all, especially for the talent that Byron Murphy is. You know, I had Jerzon Newton from Illinois, the interior defensive lineman, ranked ahead of Byron Murphy, but they were both right there, and they were both top 15 players on my board. So to get him, you know, where they did at number 16, that's kind of that BPA approach that people talk about all the time. And the reason why, yes, you know, if you're looking at it from a pure needs perspective, you mentioned the bigger need was technically along the offensive line. I thought they would have gone with Troy Faltanu, but I can't hate what they did here because you're getting a really good player who's going to be a difference maker for you. You know, Byron Murphy, I expect to be a mainstay on this defensive line for years. And so it's really hard to argue that pick just because of need. And in fact, I think the draft is normally operated well when you go more towards best player available than need. I think it's a balance of both, but I think anybody out there would tell you, you can't pass up on these good players just because you may have had a need here and there. You often draft for much longer than just the 2024 season, right? I think we all get caught up in, oh, okay, well, look at their depth chart for 2024. This is what they need the most. But in reality, you should be signing free agents for the current year. You should be drafting for the years that follow. So I have no problem with what they did there, especially when you look at how this draft was constructed, really, and the depth of it. And there was going to be a good interior offensive lineman. Now, I didn't think that Christian Haynes, one of my favorite players in the draft, was going to get to them at number 81, but there was going to be somebody along the interior offensive line who they knew they could pick in the third round. Whereas if you flip it, you go Faltanu at the first round, not really a lot of interior defensive linemen who could be anything close to the impact that Byron Murphy could have. So to me, the bigger need along the interior offensive line, no doubt about it, but to get Murphy where they did and then to get Haynes was evidence of a really good draft strategy and really good prep work before draft weekend.
Trevor, I'm with you in the sense that all their picks made sense. There was a pick that wasn't made that surprised me. It was them not drafting a running back. The Seattle Seahawks are known for drafting RBs, right? They want to keep three or four in the stable at all times. So they didn't draft a running back, but they did draft two corners. What does that say about this roster? Is there someone on this roster you feel like, all right, the Hawks aren't completely sold on it, and they want to make sure at the corner position they're good to go?
Well, obviously you have an incredible rookie season from Breek Woolen, and I still think he's a really talented player. But, you know, a cornerback I just think is a very up and down position. So you want to be able to have the bodies to supplement if somebody's, you know, having a down year. Shoot, I mean, we were even talking about this not too long ago, a couple of buddies of mine, just A.J. Terrell from the Atlanta Falcons, right? A.J. Terrell, okay, he has that all-pro season. Then the next year, it's like he was barely even startable. Now he kind of bounced back a little bit, which is fine, but that's just the cornerback position. So I totally understand wanting to throw a lot of resources and draft capital and guys that could really develop to potentially be full-time starters or even spot starters for you just because the position itself is so cyclical. You don't know who's going to have a hot year, and to have these corners that year in and year out you could depend on is so, so rare. So both Pritchett and DJ James, a lot of experience playing in the SEC. You know, they went up against some really great competition over the last couple of years. These are two really talented football players. And so even if they're just depth players for you, I think that they're really high priority depth players of guys that might be able to develop into starters. And then just kind of going back to the earlier part of your question, the running back room, I mean, you got Kenneth Walker and you got Zach Charbonnet, who I think you are very happy with. Then, of course, you got, you know, Kenny McIntosh is after them on the depth chart. And I can understand why that they would see the corners that were left on the board where they kind of picked James and Pritchett and said, okay, this is where the worthwhile talent is, right? It goes back to the BPA. It goes back to, well, we haven't drafted a running back yet, but we really like this corner, and just making your team better. And like I said, the draft is much less of a short-term view than I think a lot of people make it out to be. And this is more of, okay, we just think these players are really talented and could be starters for us one day if, you know, contracts go awry or if some guy ends up pricing himself out of where we could bring him back or anything like that. So corner is always a position that you want to be deep at. So I'll never fault somebody too much for loading up at that position.
What was for you their best pick where you thought, oh, completely nailed this, love this player? And what was your biggest question mark?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Christian Haynes pick, to me, it's just an absolute home run. I had him ranked 60th overall on my big board. I thought he was for sure going to be a second-round pick. I got to watch him firsthand at the Senior Bowl, and he was awesome. I mean, this is somebody who I think could start at both center and guard for you. You know, you have interior offensive line needs with the Seahawks. And so for them to be able to get a player who I think has the potential and the talent level to be able to start right away, I think is really, really important. So getting him at number 81 was definitely the best pick for me. And then, you know, I just think, again, going back, I don't mean to harp on it too much, but, you know, picking Barner where they did in the fourth round, there was a lot of great talent that was still left on the board just overall in the draft class at number 121. And he's a guy who I feel as though you could have gotten a little bit later in the draft. And so that's one where I just kind of question exactly how high they took him. But I also want to shout out their sixth round pick, Lumea, the offensive tackle from Utah. I know he played tackle there, but even when I was watching his tape, I went, man, this guy's, I mean, the feet are a little bit heavy to play at tackle at the next level, but he is powerful. I mean, I really do think he could be a really good interior offensive lineman, a potential guy who can switch from tackle at the college level to guard at the NFL level and be able to be a really valuable depth piece for them on the interior. So I think both of those offensive line picks for them could end up being really good value.
I was going to ask you about the offensive line. We spoke to Jim Moore the other day, and he just loved Christian Haynes, who he has a player as a person. Watched a lot of film on the young man out of Utah. The questionable one, not questionable, but just intriguing would be Mike Durrell out of Finlay. I didn't know much about him. Had to look him up, obviously, watch some film and read the scouting report on him. He seems like a project. Do you think they could have waited to get him during a free agency? And obviously they didn't. What made them go after this young man? What do you see in him?
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, look, anytime you're drafting an offensive lineman on day three, it's probably just going to be a roll of the dice anyways. And so Durrell is one of those guys that I didn't get a ton of eyes on when I was going through the process, but he is somebody who very clearly, if you look at their draft overall, you know, maybe they didn't draft an offensive lineman in the first round, but you now have three offensive linemen that you picked overall. So they're clearly just trying to go for the let's throw a lot of darts at the dartboard kind of approach with this offensive line strategy. And even though I think they got a really good one there, Durrell is obviously somebody who might be able to come into the mix and be sort of that swing player for you. When I was covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a beat reporter about 4 or 5 years ago, I remember talking to their head coach at the time, Dirk Cutter, and he said, look, unless you absolutely have a starting spot to your name, you better be able to play all these different spots. So I guess they're probably hoping that there's some versatility there with him, that he can either play as a guard tackle, a guard or a center or something. Because if an offensive lineman goes down, you really have to have that next man up. So understand why they went that direction with their last pick there to get Durrell on the team, just to give them some depth and some versatility.
We only have 3 more minutes with you, Trevor, so I wanted to take a step outside of Seattle and look around the rest of the NFL. What was your, oh my God, what, why moment from the NFL draft?
I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record because I'm sure that everybody's been talking about it since it happened, but obviously it's the Michael Penix pick with the Atlanta Falcons. And really, it beyond just Atlanta themselves, it really is just an overall draft experiment, right? We can sit here and say, well, look at what the Packers did. They did this with Aaron Rodgers when Brett Favre was still there. They did this with Jordan Love when Aaron Rodgers was still there. But the difference is both Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love, much later picks. You're taking a guy at number 8 overall who your own GM afterwards says, best case scenario, he doesn't start for 4 or 5 years. Like, I get it. Quarterback's really important. And if you set up a beautiful transition from one to the other, and you tell me you've got two all-pro, Pro Bowl caliber quarterbacks that you're going from one to the other, sure, it works out for you. But my goodness, you got to get more out of a number 8 overall pick than not playing for you for the first 4 years. That's basically the entire rookie contract. So that one was really puzzling to me. I can see a reality where it works out, but man, I just the odds of that happening are so small, and the odds are much, much, much higher that something goes awry and we're going to look back on this pick and say, man, they really could have used a different type of player there at number 8.
Do you think Caleb Williams will reverse the curse of a quarterback over there in Chicago? Not a lot of success other than back in the 80s when it comes to the quarterback spot. He does have a bunch of weapons, man. Offensively, they should be good to go. What's the potential over there? Do you think the Bears finally got themselves one?
Yeah, the thing that encourages me the most about Caleb Williams in Chicago is the fact that they got a good defense, right? This is a unit that was a borderline top 10 defense in the NFL last year, depending on kind of what you were looking at. I know they added a couple of bodies in free agency as well. So what I'm really looking forward to is Caleb Williams not thinking he has to score 50 points every single week, because that's what it was like when he was at USC. You see a lot of those Superman types of plays that some people go, well, he plays Superman too often. Well, you look at that USC defense, and I don't blame him every week thinking that he had to score 50 or he had to score a touchdown every drive or else his team wasn't going to win. So that is what I'm looking forward to most, but I do believe in Caleb. He was my number one overall player in this class. Chicago didn't overthink it, and they're certainly glad that they did not. Obviously, getting Romo Odunze is huge for them at number nine as well. Sets up what could be the best trio of pass catchers that we have in the NFL this season. So really excited for him to hit the ground running with an offensive line that's already got a lot of chemistry with one another, an experienced backfield for him to hand the ball off to, and then obviously an incredibly talented receiver core to throw it to. So it's not like this guy's getting dropped into a situation where he's got no weapons, he's got no offensive line. It's the opposite. A lot of people think that Chicago was just a quarterback away, and now you get a really talented one to show if that's true.
He is Pro Football Focus lead draft analyst Trevor Sikkema, kind enough to join us to talk about his draft grade for the Seahawks, as well as some takeaways from around the league. Trevor, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Anytime.
All right. Coming up in 15 minutes, we are taking a look around the rest of the league, the latest following the draft and news around the NFL. Before then, let's head to the station for Hype Train. I'm going to start with some NFL news before I get to the Mariners. We saw a report from Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times that the Seahawks still in talks with Jamal Adams on making a potential return. There's another team that's in talks with Adams, reportedly. We'll talk about that in NFL headlines. Right now, though, your hype train is this. Jamal Adams will come back to Seattle as a Seahawk.
Man, the money has to be right. The relationship has to be right. And I think with Pete Carroll not being here and a whole new coaching staff, maybe Jamal views this as a fresh start, just in the same location. So the longer he sits, the more I think this is going to go down. I'm going to get on this first hype train and say, they bring Jamal in. They test him out, see what he can do, and they work some out.
Jamal Adams will come back as a Seahawk. Curtis, are you boarding?
I am boring. I think.
Wow. Okay.
Much to my chagrin. I think that Jamal Adams is in a Seahawk uniform in 2024, which is hard to fathom. But like, the more we talk about it, the more John Schneider and Mike McDonald talk about it, the more likely it seems to happen. Like, okay. They don't talk about guys that they have no plan on bringing in. So, yeah, I think Jamal Adams is back as a linebacker. So, yeah, get ready, Seahawks fans. Hate to say it, told you so.
I don't think this is happening. Seattle doesn't have a ton of cap space. Jamal would have to take a, as Bump said, huge pay cut from what he was making in order to do this. And he seems like someone who, no knock on him at all, is prideful. And as would I be if I were a former sixth overall pick and if I had made millions and millions of dollars and knew that I could be great. So I don't see this happening. Next hype train into the station, the Mariners looking for their fifth consecutive sweep, and they'll get it. No, sorry, not sweep. Fifth series win, and they'll get a sweep.
That would have been awesome.
No. They will sweep the Braves as your hype train and making it complicated.
They will sweep the Braves. Nah, man, they couldn't even sweep the Rockies, you know? So, right, they didn't sweep the Rockies, right? Yeah, I said they were due for one, and they got one. This is baseball, man. And especially with that lineup, you would expect them to put something together, especially if the Mariners aren't able to get the amount of runs that we need them to get, right? They need four or more. They get score four or more, most likely they win those ball games. But nah, Atlanta's going to get at least one of these things. Not tonight, though.
The Mariners will get their... we'll get a sweep of the Braves. Bump is not boarding. He said he couldn't even sweep the Rockies. Why would you sweep the Braves? Curtis, are you boarding?
That's a little different, though. That was on the road. Coors Field is always pretty random. This Braves team is ridiculously good. 19-8 on the season. I believe yesterday was the fewest runs that they've scored in a game this season with one. And they've got Reynaldo Lopez on the mound tonight, who is off to a really good start. I don't see them sweeping the Braves. I think they can win the series, but I don't see them sweeping the Braves. So I'm going to let this train go on by.
I'm going to say they do it. No reason. This team is too good to be swept. And I don't remember the last time the Braves were swept. It can't be something
time.
That happens often. But the Mariners are chaotic, and I'm trying to pick good vibes out there. Do I believe it'll happen? No, but I'm trying to will it into happening.
There was a stat, I think it's still true, the Braves have been shut out fewer times since 2022 than the White Sox have to start 2024.
The White Sox are so god-awful that if I were a fan, like, you know when, was it Tim Burton? Who was the director of the Batman starring George Clooney, and he said he would give people their money back if they spent, like, there was a rumor that if you went up to George Clooney and you said, I spent money to go watch the Batman that you starred in theaters, there was a rumor he'd give you money back.
Really?
Yeah, that's what the White Sox should do.
Joel Schumacher did that Batman, not Tim Burton.
Why do you know things?
Because I'm a loser, Stacey.
Next type train. LeBron James is a Laker in 2025.
It's a bunch of contingencies on this one, man.
Excuse me, 4 or 5, 2024. Yeah.
What's up? Where's Bronny? Does Bronny enter the draft? Who drafts him? Who rolls the dice on him? But here's the thing. LeBron wants to be in L.A. He's already thinking about life after basketball. He's got his production company going. His kids are in high school right now in California. You don't just uproot the family like that. So just because of his family, I think he's going to stay put in L.A. So I guess I'm on this hype train.
LeBron James is a Laker in 2024-2025. Bump is boarding. He didn't sound very excited about it. Curtis, are you?
I'll board this train, and I also think that Bronny James is going to end up being a Los Angeles Laker as well. L.A. is probably going to have a draft pick where if they use it on Bronny, it's not going to seem like they're flushing it. So I think they end up taking Bronny as well to appease LeBron. LeBron ends up retiring in purple and gold. You heard it here first.
Yeah. I like LeBron. I also think LeBron has a penchant for the dramatic flair. And I think it sound like, yeah, I don't know what could happen, I'm not going to answer that question, is very LeBron-esque.
Got to wait and see.
Yeah, and I think that we're going to end up seeing him still with the Lakers.
He could have answered the question and be like, you know what, I'm going to take my time and figure this thing out. And who knows?
That's not how LeBron operates. It's not how LeBron operates.
Text me later.
Next type train. Emerson Hancock isn't going to AAA when Brian Wu comes up. He's going to the bullpen.
I like that theory. Like I said earlier, I would love for him to stay around the ball club. He has some talent there. You still feel like it needs to be developed a bit more. And I'm like you. No real logic behind this. No real data. I guess there was some logic. I want him to be around the team. So for that, I'm saying yes or no. He's not going down. Hold on. Emerson Hancock is going to AAA. He's going to the bullpen. He's not going to AAA. He is going to the bullpen, Stacey.
I'm boarding the train.
Took a while to get
boarding
there.
Boarding the train.
I took a wrong turn. I dropped my ticket. I was going to get another copy of
That's fine.
But we're good.
You always got to keep it on your person, Bump.
Emerson Hancock isn't going to AAA. He's going to the bullpen. Bump is boarding. We figured it out. Curtis, are you?
Does Brian Wu have better stuff that translates to coming out of the bullpen than Emerson Hancock? It feels like Wu has a lot more reliever-type quality pitches than Hancock does. So while I will board that Emerson Hancock's not going to AAA, I don't think he's the one that's going to the bullpen. Ooh. I think it's Brian Wu that maybe starts the year out in the bullpen. Ooh, okay. And that is also a way you can monitor Brian Wu's workload a little bit better by having him pitch 1, 2, 3 innings at a time.
Sounds like Curtis has been talking to somebody over there with the Mariners.
No.
Yeah, we've been talking to Curtis.
Just picking up vibes.
Let's see. Do I have time for one more? Nah, we'll wrap up Hype Train. My last one was, I think that you guys will just board for vibes. It was, there'd be 8 strikeouts today for the Mariners starter and 8 or fewer for the Mariners lineup.
Yep, with that. With that,
That's bold.
I mean, Luis can get you 8. So can the Mariners lineup.
So you're not boarding.
So I'm not boarding. They're gonna give you 10. They're gonna give you 10.
I think 8 strikeouts. Is Luis Castillo on the mound tonight? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8 strikeouts for Luis. And I just, it's you're right. It's the second half that I'm hesitant. That scares me. All right. Jersey numbers have been assigned for the Seahawks 2024 draft class. And there's another team reportedly in touch with Jamal Adams for a return. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Whether you're planning a special birthday party for 14 friends and family or a company outing for up to 400 coworkers, Mariner's Suites are the perfect spot for your next get-together. Enjoy catering, VIP parking, private entry, and more. Reserve today at mariners.com/suites.
911, what's your emergency?
Someone on every line said they kidnapped my son.
On September 12, 1995, McKay Everett disappeared from his home in Conroe, Texas.
There was no sign of forced entry. It was just as if McKay had walked out of his own free will.
And to this day, McKay's mother, Paulette, feels that justice was never truly served. Ransom is available now. Listen at ransompodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stream every Seattle sports show with the Seattle Sports app. Brought to you by Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center. Get new videos, podcasts, and articles on the Seahawks and Mariners from your favorite Seattle sports personalities daily. Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Get your questions in for What I Need to Know coming your way in 15 minutes. 866-979-3776. Jersey number assignments for the Seahawks 2024 class have been doled out. 91 going to Byron Murphy, Christian Haynes, 64. Tyrese Knight, 48. A.J. Barner got that Jimmy Graham and Will Disley, 88. Oh, no, Will Disley became 89 after a while.
Yep.
Nehemiah Pritchett, 28. Sadaoa Lumea, 63. DJ James, 29. And Mike Gerald's getting 65. Nothing like incredibly, incredibly notable to me.
91's a fire number. I like 91.
That's a good number.
48, though, for a linebacker.
That's a
Tyrese. Yeah, but that's just...
You know what?
That's a day three linebacker.
That ain't even day three. That's like,
that's
see if you make the team.
Fullback linebacker.
Type practice linebacker squad. Number. But maybe he likes it. So support you, Tyrese.
All right. Next up, following their selection of Caleb Williams and a few other stellar pieces in the draft, including UW wide receiver Roma Dunze, the Chicago Bears are favored to have their first winning season since 2018. Is anyone surprised?
No, we're not surprised. At home, they're going to play the Lions, the Packers, the Vikings, the Rams, the Seahawks, the Jags, the Titans, the Panthers, the Patriots. Away, Lions, Packers, Vikings, Cardinals, Niners, Texans, Colts, Commanders. I'm going to give this more thought. Maybe tomorrow, look deeper into this and see how many wins I think they can get. But they should. They have a trio at the receiver spot that is ridiculous. And a number one pick at quarterback. They should have a winning record.
Let's talk about T. Higgins and where you would rate him among great wide receivers, number two wide receivers, third-tier wide receivers. He reportedly wasn't offered a deal approaching $20 million in average annual value from the Bengals during their most recent contract talks. This, according to Cincinnati Inquirer's Kelsey Conway. They have to also pay Ja'Marr Chase a ton of money. They're already paying Joe Burrow. Not approaching $20 million average annual value is a little lower than I would expect, though. But he's kind of that, like, in-between kind of like, you're not wide receiver tier one. You're also really solid as a number two, but are you willing to be that?
My man, I get him wanting to maximize his money, but you're coming off a season where you only played in 12 games. You're banged up in those 12 games, 656 yards and 5 touchdowns. The timing of it is all messed up. If he would have had last year's stats or in 2022, his stats then, when he had 74 receptions, 1,029, and 7 touchdowns, maybe you could get into that conversation. But the timing's all jacked up, man. And that's unfortunate because I think he might be worth that because you look at who he is as a player. You take away the stats, then I think he gets it. But, of course, the organization is going to use his last year production and availability against him when it comes to paying him.
That other team reportedly in touch with free agent safety Jamal Adams, that would be your divisional foe, the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers could use a veteran safety. Talanoa Hufanga is working his way back from a torn right ACL. They drafted a safety, Malik Mustafa, with number 124 overall in the fourth round, but they don't have a ton of depth there. I can see Jamal Adams as a fit. Would he actually do it? I can't imagine they could pay him a ton of money.
No, I think that's what it comes down to. It comes down to who's going to pay you the most. And if it's comparable, you're probably going with the 49ers because of that defense and the success that they've had. This is time for Jamal to be selfish. You already grabbed the bag when it comes to being one of the highest paid safeties at the time. You did sign with the Seahawks. Now it's about fit and who's going to pay you the most. Comes down to a bidding war, and they're close in numbers. Jamal's probably going to go to the 49ers.
Jacksonville's exercised their fifth-year options on Trevor Lawrence and running back Travis Etienne. No surprise there at all. Teams have until May 2nd, that is just around the corner, to decide on picking up a player's fifth-year option. Oh, just around the corner, and the day after Matt's birthday. Matt hates attention on him. Everyone make sure to tell Matt happy birthday.
What's your handle on X, Matt?
I don't do any social media. Don't try to find me.
You don't have any social media?
That doesn't surprise me at all. I don't even think you're lying.
You got Facebook.
Oh, yeah, me, the social guy. I'm on social media.
Yeah, but you can have an account just to create, and you look up your whatever you're interested in. Everyone has their own interest. You can find it on social media.
Yeah, you can find comic book stuff.
Everyone has their own interest. Mine is not being able to be found.
You got Facebook, though, for sure. You got Facebook.
No comment.
Everyone has Facebook.
I don't have Facebook.
You got a LinkedIn. I know that. Follow you there. We're friends.
Do you follow it? The thing that I love most that is a running joke that goes so under the radar is Bump's desperate need to be friends with Matt.
No,
and
we
to,
are friends.
And to constantly
we're
be
really
like,
close.
We're friends. We're friends. We're really tight. Close. Me and my friend, Matt. And Matt just being like, ugh.
Yeah.
Bump's a great guy. We have nothing in common.
They have the dynamic in high school of the jock who tries to appeal to the nerd.
Yeah. Like Bump thinks, like the jock's like, oh, we're becoming friends. And the nerd is like, no, we're not.
That's not what's happening here.
We're going to homecoming together, same group.
Matt, did you go to homecoming?
Of course he did.
Why are we talking about me? It's NFL headlines.
Great question. Because
you could have made it to the league if you didn't blow out your knee that 1 year. You are NFL material, man.
Former Broncos quarterback Chris Harris announced his retirement from the NFL. He retires as a four-time Pro Bowl selection, three-time All-Pro, 2015 Super Bowl champ, and was selected to NFL's 2010s All-Decade team. Congratulations, Chris Harris, on a wonderful career.
Man, he's the type of dude that shows up anywhere and be like, look, you might not know who I am, but go ahead and read that resume, and you'll realize how important I was while he played. So, big ups to Chris Harris. Great career. I think he maybe had one or two more years in him. But you go out on your terms. I like it.
Who's one of those players you look back and you go, I don't think we appreciated this guy when he was playing, but in hindsight, it's so obvious how important he was to his team's success. Now, you could go Seattle, but you don't have to.
I'm going to go with...
I have my obvious. Sure. My obvious answer that I think most Seahawks fans would say, and this was on a national scale, would be Cam Chancellor.
Cam
did not get the attention that Sherm and Earl did, nor even Marshawn, but he was so important to that defense.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with JJ Stokes.
That's a very out of the woodwork answer, and I like it, and I respect it. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, J.J. Stokes was good for the Niners. Went to UCLA. Was a local legend when I was growing up. Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's like a good, like a wide receiver two overshadowed by a wide receiver one. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Brandon Marshall. I don't think people realize how good Brandon Marshall was in his prime.
It's because the Bears were never great. They never did anything.
He never played in a playoff game.
That's what's wild to me is you have not just Brandon Marshall, but like Barry Sanders appeared in like three total playoff games and I don't think had a playoff win. Mm-hmm. Calvin Johnson, the same kind of deal, like maybe has one playoff win maybe. There are so many great players that didn't do anything because they were with bad organizations.
How about Charlie Batch? QB for the Lions back in the day. He had a couple good years with Herman Moore and the gang over there.
Yeah. A.J. Brown doesn't care how much he's getting paid. He says being the highest paid receiver in the NFL doesn't mean anything. Being asked about it through NFL Network, he told reporters nothing, as in the significance of being the highest paid wide receiver and what it means to him. It means nothing. He said, I want to prove it. We don't play on paper. No one cares what's in the bank account when you step between the lines. I like the answer, but highest paid is a pretty nice place to be. That being said, who knows how long it lasts? because these wide receiver contracts are coming in hot.
Last about 6 months to a year.
Yeah,
and
truly.
Then someone's going to pass you up. That's a great attitude, but he definitely cares about his bank account, and you should, because the NFL will get rid of you as soon as you're banged up. So, sounds good, but in reality, I'm sure he's sitting around his boys talking about, yeah, I'm getting as much as I can.
I think that it's just kind of a thing that, no disrespect to NFL players, because we all, in our own ways, no matter what you do, are hypocritical in certain ways. I am a hypocrite in certain ways. You are a hypocrite in certain ways. It's just natural.
I'm not.
One way that I think NFL players can be is exactly in this instance. When you aren't getting paid, you feel disrespected and you talk about how you're worth more and how, like, well, you know, I know what I'm worth. And then when you do get paid, you go, it doesn't mean anything. I got to prove it.
For love of the game. Yeah.
I'm not about it. I'm not about getting paid. Yeah, I don't even care about it. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Just
you
say, care. I got paid what I deserve, but I'm going to show you why.
You know why? Because social media is a you know what, and they're going to drag you regardless of what you say.
No matter what you say, there's no winning. Get your questions in for What I Need to Know, brought to you by Cookies Country Chicken, 866-979-3776. Coming your way next.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
911, emergency.
On September 12, 1995, McKay Everett disappeared from his home in Conroe, Texas.
There was no sign of forced entry. It was just as if McKay had walked out of his own free will.
And to this day, McKay's mother, Paulette, feels that justice was never truly served. Ransom is available now. Listen at ransompodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you're running the hurry up and don't have time for your favorite Seattle sports show, listen to the podcast on demand.
How about that? Unbelievable.
What a thought. Every hour, every interview, every look behind the scenes.
It's Geno Smith.
Competition brings out the best in everybody.
If I were a Seahawk fan who wasn't listening to that, I would have to hear that.
Find us on SeattleSports.com, the Seattle Sports app, or wherever you get podcasts.
Oh, it's fun.
It changes everything. Never miss a minute of Seattle Sports, your home for the Seahawks and Mariners. Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by Cookies Country Kitchen. Get your questions in 866-979-3776. That's the Mac and Jack's text line. What I Need to Know. Let's see. Boye Mafe had 3 sacks his rookie season, 9 sacks last season. Is it reasonable to expect that he'll continue this trajectory with 27 sacks in 2024? I think that's fair.
Simple math.
I think that's totally fair.
He'd be the
fair.
Greatest defensive player of all time.
All time, Craig.
You know, Boye Mafe, you just keep developing. 9 sacks his rookie, 3 sacks rookie, then 9 last year. If he can hover around 10, 11, I think that's a win. I don't see why not, man. He's a more versatile type of edge rusher. He is okay in space. He will make the tackle. Keep developing, young fella. 27 is a bit much, but I see like 10, 11.
Let's see. Question for Michael Bumpist. Oh. It's time to create a definition. What is a bumpist? It sounds like an occupation.
A bumpist. That's someone who teaches you how to handle rude people in the airport when they bump into you and they're not paying attention to what they're doing. You're a bumpist.
No. It's like a dentist for lipomas, like bumps that you have on your skin.
Uh-huh.
A bumpus.
Lipomas.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Okay.
That's why we're friends, because you come up with great things like that, Matthew. Thank you.
What I need to know. You're building an MLB team, and you have to build your team around only one of these 4 players when they were in their prime. Who do you pick? Griffey, Ichiro, Randy Johnson, or Felix?
It's Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah, it's Griffey. Are you really going to say something else, Bump?
Yeah.
No.
It's all about pitching. Going Randy.
He's 4-time Cy Young winner.
Going Randy. It's all about the pitching, man.
5th option, Alex Rodriguez.
I'd still choose Griffey. Would you choose A-Rod?
It'd be close.
Who would you choose?
So mad at yourself.
Who would you choose?
I mean, God, both were phenomenal. And I think Alex Rodriguez does not get enough respect for the numbers that he put up in a Mariners uniform. Why. I'll pick Ken Griffey Jr. just to play nice, but
all right,
it's closer than I think most people want to admit.
What I need to know, Matt, what would it take for you and Bump to watch the game at a bar and drink beers? $20? $100?
I don't really like beer is the thing.
What are you a cider guy? What do you drink?
I'll do a cider.
Okay. Seltzer. I know a place. You
cool.
And me.
Yeah.
I'll see you in the coordinates.
Let's see. What I need to know, when would you bring up Cole Young and Harry Ford?
When they're ready.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be doing them any favors.
Yeah,
right
I don't
now.
Think so either.
Take your time. Take your time.
What I need to know, biscuits or croissants?
Biscuits all day.
Who says, I mean, croissants are delicious, but who's choosing croissants
biscuits
over biscuits?
Biscuits got that flavor, though.
And biscuits, ooh, you can have it like scone style with jam and butter. You can have biscuits and gravy. You can have it as part of a breakfast sandwich. A croissant's just kind of a croissant.
A croissant.
It's French. It's crispy.
Then you take
it's
French.
Fine.
You took French. What'd you take?
I don't even
talk
about
we've
it.
Gone over
we've
this.
We've established that I didn't do well in French class. What I need to know, am I wrong when I'm at my kid's game and I have an opposing team parents on my sideline going off that I want to go off?
Nah. What game are you at? If you're at a soccer game, well, I said this song, get off my line. Please get to your side of the field, please, so we don't have this mix-up. But no, it's competitiveness. I feel you. I understand why you would feel that way.
All right. Someone said, putting on my shower bench Bump hat, nothing beats croissants in France.
Oh, sorry. Biscuits.
a lot of people saying Randy Johnson. It's just hard to not look at Griffey and think that that's the definitive great.
I mean, you're building a team, right?
Yeah.
Building a team.
I mean, part of the problem with early Mariners teams at times was that either they had great offense and no pitching or great pitching and no offense.
Yeah, I think just Randy is safer to build around.
What I need to know, Matt. Yo, Matt, how are you liking the new X-Men 97?
Dude. Okay. It rocks. It is
okay, the dugout
nostalgia.
Starts in 10 yeah, minutes.
No, no, we got time for this. We'll make time for this.
Do we?
It is so amazing. It makes me so happy. I've always been a massive X-Men fan. It's perfect. Watch it if you're not.
What I need to know, the Mariners have been playing this good as of recently. If the Mariners have been playing this good as of recently, what's their ceiling? Is it a couple 10 to 15 plus win streaks?
A couple. Ooh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, a couple 10 win streaks.
Ooh-wee. I'll take one. 1-10, sprinkling some 3 and 4s in there.
God, a couple of years ago when they won 14 straight, we were like, oh my God, this is the greatest baseball we've ever seen.
425 said, y'all tripping a flaky, buttery croissant all day over a dense, bland biscuit.
You didn't have my mama biscuits, that's why.
I was going to say, 425, I think you're eating the wrong biscuits.
Let's see, what I need to know. Are zebras black with white stripes or white with black stripes?
Wow. Sounds racist.
Yes.
Wow.
Sounds racist. How dare you bring that negativity on the Bomba Station show? How dare you?
Someone said croissant sandwich over biscuit sandwich all day. There is biscuit breakfast sandwich.
Breakfast
delicious.
Sandwich. Croissant like lunch, you know, turkey, ham and cheese, something like that. Yeah, I can see that.
Someone said, I really need a Kendrick reference on this episode. Oh, push-ups or Euphoria. Kendrick has a new, is it an album or a single?
He got a new diss.
A new diss?
I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't either.
Targeted at Drake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it's like, what I read about it was, as an artist, he doesn't sound great. Like, it's not like his greatest sound or skill, but that the digs that he takes and the hits that he takes are like cut pretty deep.
He's more clever. Like, Drake is going to make a good song. Kendrick's going to hit you with some bars.
Drake's going to make a bop. I thought Back to Back was a pretty good diss track, though.
I thought it was too.
It was a good diss track in addition to being a good song.
Yeah.
I read that Kendrick Lamar in his new diss track with Drake mistook Haley Joel Osment for Joel Osteen, the televangelist. He mentioned something about ghosts in his new song and references Joel Osteen when I think everybody's like, I think you mean Haley Joel Osment, the star of The Sixth Sense.
Fix it.
It's the whole, the Joels, you know?
Let's see. Is a scone a biscuit?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No. No, it's a pastry.
I agree.
Yeah. A scone is closer to a cookie. Like a very soft cookie.
I just saw a, it's funny you say that, Stacey. I saw a video of a person from England try our biscuits, and he called it a scone.
Well, don't people in England have weird names for things? Like, they call cookies biscuits. They have other words that I don't understand. None of it makes sense.
Chips are called crisps.
Yeah, just all kinds of things. All right, you guys, that'll do it for What I Need to Know. And for Bump and Stacy, we aren't going anywhere, though. Bump and I hanging around along with Curtis and Matt. We are going to become the dugout. All Mariners from 1 to 2. We're going to start with Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joining us next. Don't go anywhere.